This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Now, I love to travel, and 2020 has been a watershed year for me and many of us who love to travel. You know, I have a simple goal of visiting two new countries a year, and really, I think I'm such an overachiever. Well, Yui Pao Redford, or more popularly known as Yui, made history in 2017 by becoming the first Asian woman to visit every sovereign country in the world. That's more than 200 countries and territories. Now, that's an overachiever. How did she do it? Why did she do it? Let's find out. So nice to be speaking to you, Yui, out in the UK.
Hi, Frida. Thank you for having me.
Now, how did you get into this trajectory of traveling to all the countries in the world? Something that we all think about but never get around to doing.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, travel has always been a huge part of my life. My father was a pilot and my mother was an avid scuba diver. So when I was a child, we did take many trips abroad as a family. So I guess that was kind of how my interest in travel initially developed. But I never imagined at the start that I would be able to visit every single country. Because as you've said, the world is a huge place, or at least it seems that way when you first start out. And I didn't actually have a set plan or any fixed goal involving specific numbers or timeframes at the beginning.
Right.
My intention was really just to see as much of the world as I could. So personally, my travels are motivated by a really deep sense of curiosity, I would say, and a thirst for experience and a desire to learn. And I've always really been intrigued by the similarities and the differences between the different regions and cultures of the world and the patterns that exist between them. So I guess travel was a way for me to understand the world and gain as comprehensive worldview and perspective as possible.
Okay. So
as my travels progressed, I started wondering what else was out there and what kind of knowledge and experiences might I miss out on if I didn't make it to the other countries. So I always liken it to kind of like a personal jigsaw puzzle that I have. And the more countries I visited, the more I realized that this picture wouldn't be complete without the missing pieces. So I guess that's how the trajectory kind of progressed. Okay. But it really evolved organically over the years, rather than being determined from the start.
Right. So then that decision one day to say, I'm going to visit all the countries, right? That sort of that moment, and to finally finish it, how long did that take?
Wow. Well, the whole goal, I'd say it took just under 17 years to complete the goal. But I didn't, as I said, start out with having that goal. So I'd say it was probably around the 150 mark or so that it occurred to me that, okay, this is something that I could possibly work towards. But by that time, I was quite a seasoned traveler.
Right.
So I was better able to conceive of how to get there. And I'm quite goal-oriented, so I like to complete things. And by that time, I was quite experienced. So I started to make a more conscious effort towards reaching the finish line.
Right.
But 17 years in total. But obviously, I started the clock, so to speak, for the purposes of that kind of goal around the time that I started independently traveling, which wasn't when I was a young child, obviously. So I started doing these independent travels around the year 2000, and I finished in 2017.
So it's like 150. Oh, I might as well just finish 15 more.
That's the hardest ones to the end. So it really was quite hard going at the end, I'd have to say.
What was the last country?
The last country was the DRC, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, so in Central Africa. And the reason it was the final country was because I had major issues obtaining a visa. So it was quite a challenge.
Okay. So I've got to ask, how do you prepare yourself in terms of safety? Because that's the first thing, unfortunately, as a woman, we have to think, twice as hard.
Yes, definitely. Well, it really depended on where I was going, because in different parts of the world, they vary in terms of risk and the safety measures you have to take. So I'll answer this in terms of independent travel, because when you're by yourself without the safety net of a group or a tour guide, you're often a bit more open to risk. I'd say the first and most important thing I did was to really do my research and educate myself about the place I would be visiting, because it's really important to know the security situation and any potential risks and things about the local culture and society that you can expect. So I would study like city maps and local area maps as well of where I plan to stay or base myself, because I found it was quite useful to orientate myself and be informed of how a place is laid out. So you know public transport options and you can facilitate getting from place to place, because sometimes if you appear too lost or clueless, it can sometimes increase the risk because it makes you look more vulnerable and easy to target or attack. So I made sure I was aware of things like that. And also things like the currency exchange rate. And if you have a sort of an idea of how much things cost, like how much it might take to get from the airport to the city, then it will reduce the likelihood of you being scammed. And then with communication, I always read up on the local language and I tried to familiarize myself with at least a few key phrases if possible. Or sometimes if it was hard to learn the actual local language, there might be a more common, like mutual local lingua franca that you could use. So usually it's English, but sometimes it might be French in the Francophone countries in Africa, or it might be Spanish or Chinese or some other language. And obviously I would use apps like Google Maps and the translation apps and tracker apps. And I always bought a local SIM card with data so that I would always have internet access, particularly if I was going to be based there for more than a few days. So these are types of safety measures that you can take to prevent yourself from being in a vulnerable situation where you might actually need to contact someone in an emergency. So they really helped me.
I'll bring this up because you have a knowledge of nearly 20 world languages, but we'll talk about that later. And so in all your travels, you were traveling alone or with company?
Both, but I would say mostly alone, because of this 200 plus countries and territories I've been to, over half of them were done alone, I'd say. And interestingly, most of these countries were in Africa, the Middle East, and the more unusual parts of the world. So the trips where I was accompanied were usually just with one other person, such as my husband. And I rarely travel in big groups. And mostly I plan my trips independently rather than joining a package tour, because I feel this offers a lot more flexibility. So it's something that I've always done.
Right. And you know, you were saying how you did a lot of research, right? And of course, if you've been doing it for 17 years, in the year 2000, the internet wasn't so easy to do research then, right? I mean, it's a lot more easier to do research now, but I can imagine the kind of homework you had to do in the earlier days.
Oh, definitely. That's a really good point. I think this kind of goal has definitely become a lot more popular in recent years because of the advent of the social media platforms and the fact that information is so much more readily available. In those days, you know, you might have a guidebook somewhere or a very obscure article or blog post. So you really had to know what you were looking for, I think. Whereas now, I think people are inspired because information just appears in their feeds. They don't even necessarily have to go looking for it. So I think that's the difference between almost 20 years ago and now.
Right. We're going to talk about some of the life-changing moments you experienced in just a moment. I'm here with Yui talking about her world travel. Stay tuned to Her Vantage, BFM 89.9.
Bright, formidable media. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Her Vantage. I'm Frida Liu. This is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Yui Pao Redford, or more popularly known as Yui. In 2017, she became the first Asian woman to visit every sovereign country in the world. That's more than 200 countries and territories. And, you know, I've got to ask this question. I'm sure it's a difficult answer. Maybe two or three life-changing moments for you in all these countries. I'm sure there are about 200, but we'll stick with two or three.
Sure. Yeah, there have been a number of life-changing, I'd say transformative moments I've experienced. Some of them were related to isolated incidents, and some were the result of a number of experiences taken cumulatively. But one key moment that stands out to me is never taking my safety and life for granted. So this really hit home when I was in Afghanistan. This was maybe about 6 years ago, over 6 years ago. And there was an incident on a domestic flight where the plane had to suddenly turn around mid-flight and head back to Kabul, the capital. Right. I mean, I swear, I've never been so scared. It really makes you think about danger and risk and mortality, because we had no idea what was going on.
Right.
So it transpired later on that someone had checked into the flight and their luggage was on it, but they weren't on the flight. So it was a big security situation. But we didn't find this out until much later. So it's kind of those terrifying moments before landing where I was imagining the worst. You're thinking, is it a bomb? Is something with the plane? Is it a mechanical failure? Is this the end? And I'm thinking all these things that I hadn't done, I hadn't said. It was truly nerve-wracking. But from that moment on, I don't think I've ever taken my life and safety for granted. And even to this day, the countless flights and journeys I have taken, I really do thank God each time we land or reach our destination safely.
Right.
So that was quite a life-changing moment for me. And there was another one a couple of years later in South America, similar kind of moment, though in a different form. I was in French Guiana, and I was in a high-speed car crash. It was a large vehicle. I think it was a bus or a truck, but it was hurtling down the road in the rain, and it just slammed into the side of the car in which I was traveling.
Wow.
So the collision happened on the side I was on, and the door was completely wrecked, and the windows were smashed. But amazingly, miraculously, I only emerged with minor cuts and bruises.
Wow.
So it was another one of those moments in life where I was truly shaken. And I don't think I've ever taken my life or my safe passage for granted again. So it really makes you wake up and think, you know, life is very precious. And it really woke me up. So those are the two that stand out.
Right.
But on a nice kind of note, there is also, through my travels, the realization that there is a lot of kindness in the world. So a third incident I'll briefly mention is there was a time in Sierra Leone in West Africa where I was a victim of a near mugging on the streets at night. So that was not the most pleasant thing. But there was a kind couple who stopped their car for me on the road. And they basically rescued me from what might have been a very bad situation. They didn't have to stop. They didn't know me from Adam.
Right.
And they wouldn't accept any payment.
Wow.
But the fact that they did it really renewed my faith in humanity and the fact that there are really good people in the world alongside the bad.
Right.
And even with regards to like negative kind of behavior, I think I've learned that a lot can be actually explained by personal circumstances because people are sometimes compelled to do certain things out of
poverty.
What they feel is necessity.
Yeah.
So I think the travels really taught me to be much more understanding in this regard.
Right. And it's good that it didn't deter you from traveling further, right? Now, what's also interesting is that you've got your nonprofit, right? What does it do and what led you to start this?
Yeah, so the nonprofit is, it's called Good Use. And it's something that I started a number of years ago because I've always believed in giving back to the community. And I started it because it was something I'd been thinking about for a while, and it seemed like a natural progression because I'd always done some form of community service or other during my school and university days. So it was born from the belief that everyone can make a difference in the world, even if it's in a really small way. And however much or little you give, you can still make a difference. So travel has always been a big part of my life. And over the years, I've been to many developing nations where I've been able to see firsthand how people live. So the first time I traveled to Africa was in 2013, and I went to Tanzania to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So on the trip, it was suggested that we bring things from home to give as gifts to the climbing team.
Right.
These were like the guides, the cooks, the porters. So I ended up bringing quite a lot of stuff, like spare hats and gloves and things that just were lying around the house. And I definitely wasn't putting to good use. But I'll never forget the little ceremony they had where I presented all these gifts to the locals. And it was met with such gratitude. And it struck me that it takes a little to make a difference. And it's something you might have at hand. You know, it's not hard to get. And I felt very motivated to try to replicate this in other places and to benefit other people. So I think that was the impetus behind trying to start an entity like this.
All right. Now, tell me about your work in comparative languages. As you know, we were talking earlier, you have knowledge of nearly 20 world languages, over half of which are written in a non-Latin script. So you're doing some work around here.
Yeah. So in terms of work, my main expertise is languages. And for most of my life, I've always been learning or teaching or analyzing it. For my work, I currently offer a language consultancy service. It's called LinguaUse, so that the use thing is the common factor. But I assist both native and non-native speakers of English with their language needs. So it's quite varied, the work. So it includes teaching or training, a lot of writing, editing, and developing materials, and so on. So having a knowledge of these world languages and being able to compare them is essential, because then I'm able to identify, for example, when a translation might need to be improved. And I advise companies and entities that produce these educational materials. A lot of them are language related. And it was very helpful for me to be able to have a knowledge of a range of languages, because I find that having an awareness of another person's native language automatically increased the value I can provide to them by twice more. So that most of the languages I have knowledge of, not to the same extent, but they're most of the world's most common languages. But I've studied, I like to study languages in terms of the language family they come from. So, for example, the Romance languages, Germanic, the Slavic languages, the Turkic, and so on. So I try to learn at least one from each family.
And I guess with languages, right? I mean, in your work, it's not a literal translation on Google, because there are also nuances behind these words, right? Because it could mean something different, right, in different parts of the world. I mean, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah, absolutely. You just hit the nail on the head. That is my the reason why I try to go to these places and really find out the nuances behind them. Because I think when we run things through a translator, and, and you know, they're so common these days, if you're not really schooled in the language or you're not familiar with how they're structured, it's very easy to kind of just assume that the translation is correct. And sometimes you get some really awkward and you totally know that they've just run it through an automated system. So I try to study them and I ask a lot of questions. And it's actually been very eye-opening, this interest in languages, because it's really helped immensely on my travels. And they've kind of provided a window into the different cultures. And it's really helped me connect with the people that I meet along the way.
So what's next for Yui?
What's next?
Yes.
I love this.
You know, it's got to be the moon, because you've been to every country in the world.
I mean, I would love to go to the moon one day. But, you know, in terms of travel, things have obviously changed dramatically this past year. And it does remain to be seen if, you know, travel will resume the way it has been. And there are still many places to be explored if it does. But the thing about travel is that you're never actually really done, because there will always be places yet to see, if it's a city or a town or a village or a remote island. And honestly, there are an infinite number of lists that you could tackle. So like there's different like World Heritage UNESCO sites and, and any different kind of way of classifying a country. But I'm personally happy with what I've covered. I'm not taking on any more very ambitious lists for the time being, but I think I'll always travel in some way or other. I mean, there are places I still haven't seen yet. There are several island territories, like in the Caribbean, in the South Pacific. And I'd like to return to the places that interested me most. So I'm very deeply drawn to the desert. I love Africa and the Middle East. And my husband and I, we really like the polar regions as well. So we've been to the Arctic and Antarctica. So North or South Poles would be great.
Okay.
But I think also, I mean, in terms of what's next, I now have the time to devote to my other passions besides travel.
Right.
So that's kind of been an opportunity that this year has given us.
Right.
So I always think, you know, it's not like as if I have nothing to do now that travel's not so easy, so possible. So I've, in terms of language, so my next plan is to cover the world through a mastery of its languages.
Mm.
So as I said before, I have some knowledge of many of the languages, so I'd like to improve and consolidate this if possible.
Right.
So I've got about a list of 20 to 30 on I'm targeting.
Right.
It's a different kind of travel, but it keeps my mind active.
Right. I look forward to hearing more of your endeavors. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I've been speaking to Yui, the first Asian woman to visit every sovereign country in the world, 200 countries and territories, and you've been listening to Her Vantage, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.